This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, sitting in for Terry Gross. This Sunday, Fox presents the 200th episode of The Simpsons, the longest-running primetime animated series in TV history. Matt Groening created the cartoon characters 11 years ago as short features for The Tracey Ullman Show and spun them off into their own series in 1990. Since then, there's been a TV animation renaissance that includes Beavis and Butthead, Ren and Stimpy, King of the Hill, and South Park. Fresh Air TV critic David Bianculli spoke with Matt Groening and asked him what this milestone means to him.
Working on a show like The Simpsons, there's no hiatus like on other TV shows. We're working year-round. It takes 6 months to do one episode, and we're obviously doing many, many episodes at the same time. So it's all a big cartoony blur to me these last, I don't even know, how many years has it been since the end of 1989?
Yeah.
And, you know, we look up from our drawing tables and, you know, and go, oh, 200? Oh, okay. I mean, we're way beyond 200 right now. I mean, working on episodes for next year. It's a good episode, by the way.
Uh-huh.
It's an excellent episode. It was written by Ian Maxtone Graham, directed by Jim Reardon, and it's Homer. Here's a pitch. Homer as the sanitation commissioner of Springfield. I know it doesn't sound that exciting, but it is.
Okay, I'll trust you.
It is.
The amazing thing about The Simpsons is that it's been going on for like 172 years now, and it is still consistently entertaining week in and week out, year in and year out, in a way that most TV series that last that long are not. You guys don't seem to slump.
I think one of the reasons why The Simpsons has sustained its velocity is that the each new group of animators and writers who comes on board tries to top the previous group, and we have a bunch of really talented people who are trying to cram as many jokes and observations as they can into every episode. And one thing I'm very proud of The Simpsons is that we don't have a laugh track, unlike every other sitcom on TV, although I don't think a laugh track would work anyway in animation. But anyway, we don't have one, so we get more jokes than usual in our shows. So I'm happy.
Now, with all of the new people coming in, that means old people are going out. It used to be in the late 70s and early 80s that MTM Productions was the place where people would go to learn TV and go out. And, of course, one of your partners, Jim Brooks, was one of the co-founders there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you can look back at the people that you have lost to other venues over the years for The Simpsons and point out who's doing what where now.
Well, let's see. Greg Daniels went from The Simpsons to King of the Hill and co-created that with Mike Judge. And the rest have disappeared into total obscurity. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. Conan O'Brien went on to some success.
Yeah, near total obscurity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's really fun to see Conan. And also, you know, on the internet, we get lots of fan comments, and we read them and are thoroughly annoyed by them. Thank you very much. But our fans are very critical. And one of the annoying note posts is the idea that the show really hasn't been the same since Conan has been gone, and if we can only get Conan back. So we're trying to get Conan back, but...
What's the strangest thing that you've ever read from an internet posting? Either something that someone has caught as a joke that you never thought they would, or just some weird take on the show that you can't believe.
Well, the weirdest thing that ever happened on the as far as reading on the internet was my own obituary, which I read on April Fool's Day. Somebody posted that in the form of an Associated Press release that I had died of a heart attack in Jim Brooks's office, which is thoroughly possible, I suppose. But it didn't happen. And you know, it's always fascinating. You know that scene in Huckleberry Finn where Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn are presumed dead and all that stuff? I always was fascinated by that idea of being able to read your own obituary. And it happened to me. And it was not as fun as I thought it was going to be.
Well, Huck got to attend his own funeral. You didn't go that far.
No, I didn't go that far.
Now, another thing about Jim Brooks is that, of course, he just got Helen Hunt and Jack Nicholson a couple of Oscars for As Good As It Gets. And it seems like the Jack Nicholson character in that is not that far off from your whole Life in Hell cartoon series.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. You know, one of the great things about Jim is his enthusiasm for acting and for the going for real emotions. I mean, back in the beginning of the show, one of the things that he made sure that we kept alive was the idea that you would forget you were watching a cartoon at certain points, that we'd go for moments of real emotion. And I think, actually, if there's any secret to the longevity of the Simpsons, it's to the extent that we've been able to follow that idea, which is to make the cartoons real. And, you know, we have great actors on the show who, despite the silly lines we give them and the grotesque way they're drawn, are able to bring these characters to life. We've tried using people who do cartoon voices from time to time on The Simpsons, and they're great at what they do, but the kind of emotional reality that we're going for is something that we haven't been able to capture except with the 7 or 8 people who provide regular voices on our cast. And there was actually some controversy about that, too, because they were holding out for a lot more money. And, you know, Fox considered hiring other actors to replace them, which, of course, would have been disastrous.
Well, I would think that just given your history, that you would side so readily with the vocal actor series cast regulars getting raises that you would be not on the side of management but on the side of labor in that one.
Well, my attitude is that the Simpsons actors deserve to be as rich and unhappy as anyone in Hollywood. And so, you know,
that's a pretty high bar.
I mean, you know, they look, my whole reason for doing anything creatively is to have fun. And when this problem was first brought up and Fox was stubborn about not going for these hefty raises and all this stuff, I said, hey, look, if it's no fun, let's just not do it anymore. And they thought I was insane. As long as there's money to be made, I think the show will go on.
One thing I'm wondering about, since they do realize the value of the show at Fox, there has been no official Simpsons spinoff. And I know for a long time you wanted one and weren't sure in what direction you would take it. In terms of either television or film, where does that stand now? Or is there an entire new series that is coming from you fairly soon?
Well, part of the problem with The Simpsons is that there's so much money that's going around and around in this project that anything that involves signing new contracts makes the actual negotiations difficult or impossible. I did try to do a Simpsons spinoff, Krusty the Clown. It was originally conceived as a live-action spinoff starring Dan Castellaneta, who does the voice of Krusty as well as Homer.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that would be an amusing conceit. That is, the idea that you would do a live-action spinoff of a cartoon. But I actually sat in a big room with a bunch of people, and we talked about this, and everybody took very, very greedy positions. And I said, hey, look, if you guys all take the second greediest position, we can do this thing. We can do it. It'll be fun. And you'll still make lots and lots of money, but let's do it. But they wouldn't take the second greediest position. Everybody wanted all the money, and you can't do it that way. So that's why there has never been a Simpsons spinoff, or why there's never been a Simpsons movie. I'd love to do it. I'd love to do a movie, but it ain't going to happen. There's too much money grubbing involved. That's why I had to go on and do my own TV show, my new one. I'm working on a new animated series where we're all going to work for free. And it's going to be fun. No, we're not. No, it's going to, you know, we're starting over, starting fresh, and you know, it's going to be fun.
But you're starting fresh, and you're going to write the contract so that you retain rights this time.
You can't do it. It's Hollywood. It's crazy here. But what I do is I try to have more fun. I mean, that's the reason. This new show, which is very similar in sensibility to The Simpsons, it'll be fast-paced. The characters have big eyeballs, and they'll have no chins, and their skin's not going to be yellow. It's not a spinoff. It's a brand new show. Don't sue me. So anyway, it's where was I?
What the show is going to be? New show?
Oh yeah. So it's going to be it's going to take place in the future. It's kind of a science fiction thing. What we have done to the American family with The Simpsons, we're going to try to do to science fiction and the future with this new show. It's called Futurama. It'll be on Fox next year.
That's Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons, speaking with Fresh Air TV critic David Bianculli. The 200th episode of The Simpsons will air this Sunday on the Fox network. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our interview with cartoonist Matt Groening. He's talking with TV critic David Bianculli.
Tell me more about how Jim Brooks and you hooked up in the first place. What was it that you think that he saw in you that made it a good pairing?
Well, Jim was working with a producer named Polly Platt, who liked my cartoon strip Life in Hell, which was running in the Los Angeles Reader at the time, a local weekly paper. And she showed him my stuff. He liked it, and they actually tried to get me to put my cartoons as background props in a movie that he was doing, and that didn't work out. And then the Tracy Ullman show came along, and they asked me if I wanted to try my hand at animation, and that was the beginning of it.
Where did you think it was going to lead? How long did you think that would last?
Well, they called me up, and they said they were doing this new comedy variety show, and they wanted to have little animated cartoons as part of the show, and suggested that I animate my Life in Hell characters, which I thought was a great idea. I found out that I would give up ownership of whatever it is that I put up, and so I created The Simpsons in their stead, because, you know, Life in Hell with my rabbits and Akbar and Jeff, that's a regular gig, and I was doing just fine with that, and I didn't know if this animation thing was going to pan out at all. And I decided not to sacrifice my own characters, so I made up these other characters I didn't really care about. The Simpsons. And they were, you know, in the back of my mind, I really wanted to, you know, do this thing as a TV series. I thought it should be a TV series. And so it was inspired by both memories of my own family and in the family sitcoms that I was glued to when I was a kid. Leave It to Beaver and Ozzie and Harriet in particular were really important to me as a kid. You know, Ozzie and Harriet, everybody thinks, oh, Ozzie and Harriet. It's like this sort of symbol for blandness. And it was kind of corny and bland, but it was also really surreal. And I'm telling you, watch those reruns. They used to run them on the Disney Channel. I don't know where they are now, but they're fantastic, really. The good ones, the early ones. Not when Ricky and Dave got married, it wasn't as good. But when when they were still going through adolescence, it was really a cool show.
One major element of The Simpsons that you're cashing in on lately with CD releases is...
Cashing in? Simpsons? Well, how can you even put those two words in the same sentence?
I don't know. But that was not a disparaging cashing in, because I listen to the CDs all the time.
Hey, cashing in Hollywood, that's the biggest superlative there is.
Well, how involved are you in the music with Danny Elfman, with everybody who does the music? I don't know how some of the episodes that are very heavy on music even get thought up in the first place. How do you know that everybody can do it when you're going to do a musical version of A Streetcar Named Desire, for example?
Well, I mean, we have talented actors who will you know, throw themselves into this stuff. Alf Clausen, who does the music for the show, he was fantastic. He's able to come up with amazing solutions to the problems that are thrown at him. We're doing a second CD of stuff from the show, and you know, I'm just amazed that we didn't run out of material from the first CD, but we've got, the show is jam-packed with music. You know, The Simpsons is one of the few shows that's actually fully orchestrated these days. I thought back at the very beginning of the show that we needed an orchestra because the animation was going to be so crude and wobbly that anything we could do to anchor the animation in some kind of solidity that you could at least hear would be a real help. And now I like it just because... I think, you know, I'm tired of of synthesizers, which is what you hear on most other shows. I like that orchestral sound.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about Matt Groening at home when you're not at The Simpsons. How do you and your kids react to TV now? What life do you have when you're not working?
Well, I have two sons, age 9 and 6, and they're huge fans of the show, and we have tapes of The Simpsons. And when I get up in the morning and come down to breakfast, they're usually watching the show. And I, you know, I'm not in the best of mood before I've had my coffee, and so I tell them to shut it off. And they now think that I hate The Simpsons because I don't want to hear it before I, you know, wake up in the morning. I don't like to be woken up to the sound of Bart. Also, another thing is, you know, and I'll take this opportunity to apologize to America. You know, there was a lot of complaints about Bart and what a brat he was and a bad example for kids. And I thought, oh, come on, grow up. Stop acting like Homer Simpson and your kids won't act like Bart Simpson. But the fact is, now that I have these kids and they're quoting the show back to me, it is really annoying. I mean, we did on The Simpsons, we did, you know, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? In the car. My kids, still, years later, they still think that's funny.
What were some of the things that warped you early as a teenager? I know that Rocky and Bullwinkle had to be a big influence.
I loved Rocky and Bullwinkle. I've said this before. Jay Ward and Bill Scott, who did that, were my heroes. Because here was bad animation. I mean, let's face it, Rocky and Bullwinkle is pretty flimsy looking. But it had great writing, it had great voices, and it had great music. And I thought, boy, if you could get something like that on the air again, it'd be really fun to do. And that was one of my goals in life, and, you know.
It's one of the animated rules that I remember you mentioning is that The Simpsons will never cross their eyes. And I don't know if that goes for the other characters in the show as well, but it's just one thing that you just didn't want to have your characters do.
Oh, yeah, stylistically, there's a few rules on The Simpsons. That's one of them, that they don't go cross-eyed for gag effect. Like if you clonk them on the head, they don't go cross-eyed, and stars don't go above their heads, and little birds fly around or anything like that. Generally, when the Simpsons fall off the cliff, the unrealistic thing is that they survive, but the realistic thing is that they're, you know, battered and bloody. You know, so I think we're one of the first cartoons to actually show blood. You know, I think even in the Tom and Jerry cartoons and some of the other very violent cat and mouse cartoons, there was no blood, but there's blood on The Simpsons.
And certainly on Itchy
and you Scratchy. Know I'm proud of that, yes. Too, because I don't know why.
Well, what are some of the other rules that you decided on at the very beginning when you were first
Well, as
assist?
Far as eyeballs go, basically the characters look straight ahead or they go slightly wall-eyed to convey alienation. They don't have that one eye up and one pupil up, one pupil down look, you know, for craziness too. What are some of the other rules? Just as far as sound effects, no boings, no boing, you know, when they get hit. All the sound effects are relatively realistic. I mean, you know, when Homer falls over and you know, cracks his back against a fire hydrant, it's a celery crunch, but it could be a spine.
Now,
it's not a boing. You know, it's not a Three Stooges sound effect.
But with sound effects, is it true that you originally provided the sound effect that you did the sucking for Maggie on the pacifier?
Well, on the pacifier, yeah. Well, yes, I did.
And have you now turned that duty over to a pacifier specialist?
I think through the miracle of modern technology, as far as I know, it's still the same suck. It's they only had to do it once, and then they just keep repeating it. You know, that's how it goes.
Wow.
That's just my tongue against my lower lip.
What do you have about keeping Bart, especially, at that exact age in school?
You know, one of the great things about animation is that your actors don't get old and decrepit. You know, they don't rob stores. They don't they don't have tragic rehab stories. You know, anything like that. They just stay the way you draw them. And I think it's one of the fun things we have with The Simpsons is that Bart has turned 10 so many times, and you know we've we've talked about aging them. When this actor's strike happened on the show, there was one suggestion from a Fox executive to, why don't you just age the characters and then have different voices? That's a solution. We thought that was not such a good
scary.
Idea.
Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons, talking with Fresh Air TV critic David Bianculli. We'll hear more from Matt Groening in the second half of our show. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. Let's go back now to our interview with cartoonist Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons. He's speaking with TV critic David Bianculli. David asked him how The Simpsons are like other American families.
I think one of the things about The Simpsons is that it really is about the anxiety and consternation of living with people who drive you out of your mind. Because it's animation and because it's a comedy, we do a lot of foreshortening, a lot of slight exaggeration. I call it rubber band reality. That is, it's real, and then we stretch it out for a moment, and then it snaps back to reality. But it is about the things that drive you crazy. I mean, how do you live with people you love and you want to kill? I think that's the underlying theme of The Simpsons. And in the midst of all that, it's a celebration of that idea. That is, at the end of the day, it's not a Beckett play. It's a cartoon.
How do you think The Simpsons stacks up against more three-dimensional sitcoms? And in particular, the characters of the mothers, the fathers, and the kids.
Well, I don't want to compare what we do to other TV shows in live action, because I think when I look at those shows, I go, God, how do they do that? How can you write scenes that take place in the same room, week after week after week? Where characters just have to come in and out of doors in order to move things around. I mean, in The Simpsons, we can go anywhere we want to. We can go into the characters' fantasy worlds. We can show the TV shows that they enjoy. We can go into outer space and underwater and all kinds of stuff. We have 40 or 50 characters in a single episode. And I think that it certainly spoiled me. When I tried to do that Krusty the Clown spinoff that I was talking about earlier, part of the problem of doing a live-action version of it is when I had written a scene in which this beaver was gnawing away at the foundation of Krusty's house. The fox said, "Do you realize how much it's going to cost to get a beaver? We can't get a trained beaver to gnaw on the wood. A stuffed beaver was even going to cost a lot. And forget about a robotic beaver.
Besides,
if it's a cartoon, you can draw that beaver.
And Matt, to resort to the old beaver eating the house in the pilot."
Well, it was the premise was that Krusty moved to Hollywood and became a big self-hating talk show host,
mm-hmm.
and he lived in a house on stilts. And he throughout the entire series, he was going to hear this gnawing sound and not quite figure out what it was. But we, the audience, would know that it was a beaver.
Well, tell me, in terms of since you watched so much TV as a kid, and I did as well.
You say that like an accusation.
No, I'm actually...
Well, okay, here's the deal. You watch TV the way I did, and I really felt guilty about all the TV that I watched. I thought, geez, oh my God, it's the one life I have to live, and I'm just think of the commercials I've wasted, watching all this life. Oh, God. And I thought, the only way I can make this pay off is I actually do a TV show. Then it's all research. Then I've justified it. So this is my pathetic attempt to make up for all that wasted time.
And so the reason for making a second one, now that you've justified the lifetime with the first?
Oh, the second one is really, and this is true, it's an attempt to do the first one right. It's an attempt to have fun this time. Not that The Simpsons hasn't been fun, but it's been a mix. And I've learned a lot over the course of these last 11 years since I've been working with these characters. And this time, I know what to expect. I know how to do it, and I'm going to have a lot more fun.
Do you have any sense watching your kids right now that they're getting the same seditious enjoyment out of mass media or even alternative media that you did when you were a kid?
Well, I tried to This is going to sound worse than it is, but I tried to use my kids as a little experiment. What I tried to do is see what happens if you don't hold back on what the kids are able to look at. I mean, I don't let them watch really scary horror movies or things like that, but they get to watch videos, they get to play video games, they have their computer and their CD-ROMs and their musical instruments and comic books and magazines and monster books and all the rest of that stuff. And I just pretty much don't put a limit on the kinds of stuff they can look at or view or play with. And as a result, or not as a result, but in my particular experiment, I got kids who read like crazy and play video games like crazy too and watch tapes of The Simpsons. So far it's worked out really well because they're interested in everything. And, you know, I had to sneak around a little bit. And maybe the reason why it was so fun for me was because a lot of this stuff was a little bit taboo. And with them, they take it for granted. I say, when I was a kid, we didn't have CD-ROMs. There's a lot of good stuff from the olden days that I force on my kids. I turned them on to Little Lulu comics from the 1950s, for instance. I mean, really good comics. And
that
at first
stuff
they
scared
were,
me.
Little Lulu?
Yes. I don't
What's
know
your
why.
Problem?
Well, that's for another show. Listen, I want to thank you for being on this.
Oh
one.
No, I'm not letting you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
Sorry.
No, I just have to say we actually are out of time, and I wanted to say thanks for being here.
Thanks. Say hi to Terry.
I sure will.
Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons, spoke with Fresh Air TV critic David Bianculli. The Simpsons airs its 200th episode this Sunday.